Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased, as always, that you are here with me today. We've got a wonderful show in store for you with a fascinating woman who wrote a great book about it, a wonderful person. Husband, and we'll get right into that in just a moment. But first, of course, we have my blog post from a couple of years ago. And this one is entitled, "When We Truly Feel Good About Ourselves, We Can Hold Even More Joy." We all have certain limits in our lives, not just external limits, but internal ones. We have the ability to hold certain feelings to a point. Often, we think the challenging feelings are harder to hold, yet the same can be said of the enjoyable feelings. Of course, it is hard to hold pain and suffering for an extended period of time. The stress and anguish of holding the feelings of betrayal, loss, grief, and sadness wears everyone down who experiences them. We would all much rather experience joy, fun, and excitement. And holding those feelings presents its own challenges as well. For even though we think we are good at holding joy, there does come a point at which we unconsciously cannot allow it to continue. Then we sabotage ourselves or make bad judgments that cause us to move in the opposite direction. There could even be a sense of relief that we no longer feel good. It is common to find ourselves waiting for something bad to happen when everything is actually fine. Our society is full of sayings and idioms about how we should expect things to go bad when everything seems to be going so well. And that programming has instilled in us all some limits to experiencing the happiness we so desire. This is not even considering the fact that many of us have the feeling that we don't even deserve to feel good. For when we do a deep dive into our psychological makeup, we can find there are a lot of experiences that have caused us to feel unworthy. And that unworthiness comes out when we truly feel good about something in our lives. The amount of good feelings we can allow in our lives, as well as the length that they can last, is directly proportional to the work we have done to unravel those unconscious beliefs. Indeed, the level of success we all experience in business, in relationships, in health, is directly related to the amount of good feelings we can hold in our bodies. The better we feel about ourselves, the more able we are to hold on to those wonderful feelings. And the converse is true as well. The more unworthy and the less self-esteem we have, the less able we are to hold those good feeling sensations. So what are we to do? This is why doing our deep inner work is so important. The only way to counteract this phenomena is to dig in and process those experiences that we have held onto our whole lives. Perhaps we seek the help of a professional therapist to support us in this endeavor. Or maybe we find a shaman or medicine facilitator who is skilled at working with people. For some of us, maybe we just need to have some difficult conversations with our family and friends. This work is not for the faint of heart. It requires bravery and effort. And the rewards of that effort will be proportional to our willingness to be truly honest with ourselves. For only when we truly feel good about ourselves can we allow ourselves to experience joy, happiness, and pleasure for its own sake. So how good are you at holding these good feelings in your body? What experiences do you need to process and let go of to hold even more wonderful sensations in your life? So the germ or the kernel of this idea I got from the book The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And it's been a while since I've read the book, but the idea behind it of how holding on to good feelings is actually challenging for many of us has always sort of stuck with me. And as I work with people and as I experience people, I see that a lot of people have actually a very hard time feeling good when they've been feeling crappy for so much of their life. And I even reflect this myself. I mean, I'm the pot calling the kettle black. Like, I can have a hard time holding on to those good feelings without doing something that causes me to feel like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, that was silly. That was stupid. We all do. And I guess I wrote this blog post because I just wanted to remind people and to highlight and to really get into the fact that it can be hard to feel good. And that's normal. That's common. And when we want to shift and change that in our life, that's when we really got to dig in and do our deep work. That's when we can really dive into why don't we feel good about ourselves? Sometimes we don't even want to admit that we don't feel good about ourselves. So sometimes it's just coming to that recognition. So at least if we can be truly, deeply honest with ourselves, then we can begin the path of healing. Then we can step on that path of like, ah, okay, I'm going to feel worse before I feel better. But once I've processed these challenging emotions and feelings, then we have more space. And then we can actually do a bit more and feel better. So I guess I just relate this one to pose a question to all of you who are listening. And to maybe if you're open to this exercise for the next week, like just see, like, how often do you feel good for no reason at all? And if something happens and you're in a great feeling state, how long can you hold on to it? Is it a minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a half hour, an hour, a day? two, 3 days, a week, how long can you feel good and just enjoy that sensation for no reason at all? You don't have to earn it. Just be it. So that's my blog post for this week. The title again is When We Truly Feel Good About Ourselves, We Can Hold Even More Joy. And of course, you can always find my blog post at talkradio.nyc/blog or on my personal branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com. All right. It is now my pleasure to welcome to the show author, astrologer, dean, executive director, Dr. Kathy Coleman. Kathy was Ralph Metzner's wife for 31 years. She worked at the California Institute of Integral Studies, CIIS, as director of student services and later dean of students when Ralph was academic dean and professor there. Kathy later worked as executive director of Earthrise Retreat Center at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, as president of Kepler College of Astrological Arts and Sciences, and with CIIS's Center for Psychedelic-Assisted Therapies and Research. She was co-founder with Ralph Metzner and is the current board member of the Green Earth Foundation, and she is also a professional consulting astrologer. And her latest book, I just received, it's here, Ralph Metzner, Explorer of Consciousness, The Life and Legacy of a Psychedelic Pioneer, reveals the vast impact of Ralph's Metzner's healing therapies and wisdom on colleagues, students, clients, and the fields in which he worked. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Kathy.
Thank you, Sam.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for taking the time. So I'm curious, you were married to him for a long time. How did you meet Ralph?
Well, I first met him as a student at, I was a student at California Institute of Integral Studies, which I'll refer to as CIIS. Mm-hmm. In my essay in the book, I wrote that I have these four different connections with him. So the first was as his student. So I came to the school in 1981, and it was very small then. It was 171 students, and
wow.
I came in, and so he taught, as most professors did, quite a few different things. And Ralph has a wide reach in his ability to teach. So I don't know. I had maybe a couple of classes before I then was hired on as the director of admissions and financial aid there. And then I kind of quickly rose through the ranks and became the director of student services, which kind of meant that I was head of all the non-academic aspects of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ralph was at the time the academic dean. So then I had this overlap with him as not only my professor, because I was still finishing my graduate studies, and then then I was also kind of working side by side with him on academic issues. And I mean, we had staff meetings every week, and we were in staff meetings, and it was a pretty small school then. And and at that early stage of the 80s, there were only 9 of us on the staff. So anyway, so I had that connection for about 4 years. And then one day Ralph asked me out for lunch, which he basically never stopped to go for lunch with anybody, because he was always so hardworking. Mm-hmm. And so on our way back to school, he said, "Well, I've always wanted to be in a relationship with you. I'd like to do this." And he was turning 50, and he was going on a vision quest, and I guess he'd been thinking about it for a long time. So in some ways, I've always felt like it was a little bit like, you know, a sudden arranged marriage. But on the other hand, we knew each other really well from working together, and I knew him as a professor. So it wasn't like brand new. But anyway, that's how it all began. that.
Wow. So, and just to give our audience a little perspective, do you know how big CIAS is now?
Yeah, it's about 1,500. And I mean, it's not a huge school, but it's really grown a lot. It's grown in programs. I mean, you know, when I first came there, there were only about 6 programs. And now there's probably, I don't know, 15 or 20. And it's much, and many staff. I don't know, there's probably I don't know how many staff, 100. I mean, but there's a lot, you know, it's grown a lot.
And it's grown in reputation as well. It's really one of the premier educational organizations on the West Coast when it comes to all kinds of things, spirituality and psychedelics and all kinds of stuff like that.
Right.
And just one more question before we go to break. For those who might not have a sense of who Ralph Metzner was, he's really a pioneer. He's like one of the people who really brought the psychedelic movement, I guess, forward with people like Sasha Shulgin. What were some of Ralph's like just big accomplishments? Like why write a book about him? I know he was your husband, but I mean, what was it that he did that really had so much impact?
Well, just going back to the origin, I mean, he was European. He was born in Berlin in 1936. And then because of the war, ended up in Scotland, going to a boarding school, Gordonstown Boarding School, which is where Prince Charles went. It's kind of famous. And then he went to Oxford, and then he came to Harvard. So I kind of paint that picture because he had a lot of history before getting to Harvard, but he came as a graduate student. And then Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert Ram Dass were his professors then, grad school professors. And then they discovered LSD. I mean, they didn't discover it, but they discovered the use of it, of LSD and psilocybin, and started all of these psychedelic experiments in about 1962. And Ralph was just finishing his graduate studies. And so he was their primary, you know, he was just a major player in all those early years of experiments. And then Aldous Huxley suggested to them that they write the book, The Psychedelic Experience, based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And so then he wrote that book with Leary and Alpert. And so that's really his first claim to fame, that book. You know, I think hundreds of thousands of people have read that book. It's so there's that. And then that was, you know, that sort of seeded his lifelong interest in, you know, working with psychedelics and psychology. So he had got the PhD from Harvard in psychology, and he was a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. And then he also, you know, loved writing. That might have been his favorite thing to do. He wrote 24 books when he was, I mean, The Psychedelic Experience being the first one. And then, so he's well known as an author. Some psychedelic books, one on European mythology, one on green psychology. So he's kind of a pioneer also in eco-psychology, and which he preferred to call green psychology. And then one of his early books was called Maps of Consciousness. So he wrote about the I Ching, the Tarot, actualism, which is Agni Yoga, which is a light work meditation. And so he had many different areas. And one of the things that people kind of marvel about him is because he had such vast knowledge of Eastern and Western systems of thought and history and mythology and psychedelics and astrology, all these things, he was able to weave all of this into everything he did. And it really made everything very rich, you know, his teachings, his lectures, his research work,
Because he had such a good handle on so many different disciplines, and he could also like bring it in together and interrelate them. All right, wonderful. We got to take our first break. When we come back, let's talk about the book a bit more and about Ralph and sort of what the book reveals about Ralph, maybe that most people don't know, okay? All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Coleman. All right, everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we're speaking this hour with Dr. Kathy Coleman, author of the book, Ralph Metzner, Explorer of Consciousness. And we'll be right back after these messages.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant. And on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Kathy Coleman, author of the book, Ralph Metzner, Explorer of Consciousness. Just out of curiosity, why Explorer of Consciousness? Why is that the subtitle of the book?
Well, that was the title that the publishers chose but it's similar to what I submitted to them, which was called Intrepid Explorer. And it was hard to actually, because Ralph has so many interests, it was hard to come up with a concise title that sort of captured it all. And I came up with the title Intrepid Explorer just because he was kind of a fearless explorer of many different things. But then I think they wanted the title. I think they wanted the word psychedelic to be in the title. That's why the subtitle is The Life and Legacy of a Psychedelic Pioneer. That's not what I submitted to them, but it was fine. I could understand that. So
What was Ralph's main motivation in all of these things he was exploring? As you mentioned, like everything from I Ching to astrology to psychedelics, what was it that really drove him to dig so deep into these topics?
I'll answer that by partly looping back to your question before, which why Explorer of Consciousness. So that really was the main thing that he was always after. When he worked with people, was, you know, expanding their awareness. And even his own practice at home, I mean, he had notes around the house, you know, kind of stuck on the mirror, et cetera, like intention plus awareness, you know, equals, intention and awareness, intention and geez, let me, I'm messing this up, but let me get it here.
Yeah. Oh, if you still have the post-it note, that's wonderful. This is the
intention. Geez, I can't believe I forgot that. But yes, in fact, I have. He was always one to write post-it notes about a lot of things, notes to himself, notes of what he was doing. You know, so this was intention, attention equals awareness. So being intentional, giving it attention, and then being more aware. And so anyway, and so whatever he did, he was working with a therapy client or doing group work, psychedelics, his own awareness. even with me, he was always, this sticks in my mind. Like if I would be in a, you know, difficult mood or have difficulty with something, you know, he would just say, "You're responsible for your own consciousness," you know, which is like putting it back on me, like, you know, okay, yes, I am, you know, I am. So that's really what he was always about, was that expansion of the mind, I guess, you know, but for the good.
So would you say that at his heart, he was a healer, and that he was exploring all these different paths to help us heal our consciousness or heal our psychology, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was always after, he would do a lot of work with people around their, you know, ancestors and their, you know, their sort of baggage and their shadows and their difficulties. And at the same time, you know, projected into the future. I mean, he was really always helping people live a better life, you know, in a way. I mean, by greater awareness.
And I'm curious, there were a lot of people around Timothy Leary and Alpert around that time in Harwood. What was it about his experience with psychedelics that made him such an advocate for it? What was it that he experienced or he felt about these powerful substances that he felt was something really worth focusing on?
Well, he described that the first, to me, you know, just in person, that the first time he had a psychedelic experience, that it just kind of blew his mind, so to speak. You know, we hear that, but it really shifted his worldview. And I think he had come from, you know, World War II, living in Berlin for the first 9 years of his life, and then having a pretty difficult difficult teenage years. His parents they were split because of the war. His mother was Scottish, his father was German. The mother went to Scotland after the war with the three sons. Then he went to boarding school. He was not with his family, you know, really, except on breaks all of his teenage years. And some of it, I mean, his father was a well-to-do businessman before the war, but lost everything. And so, you know, they experienced great poverty. And so he'd come from this kind of dark, terrible, you know, difficult childhood in a way, even though he had great parents who were, I think just getting to the United States and being in and having this experience just really opened him wide, and he saw that potential for everyone.
And when you met him, I mean, he was already deep into this. Was there anything about the psychedelic work that in the beginning you were nervous about, or you were a little put off by, or were you just open and ready for it when it was introduced to you?
That's a really good question for me, because I was just a girl from Missouri, from a small town in Missouri, born in the 50s. You know, my parents were teetotalers. I mean, it's a pretty teetotalers, but very open in a certain other way. I didn't know anything about psychedelics before I moved to California, before I moved, came to graduate school here. But in the early 80s, MDMA was legal. And And when I got to the school, there was a lot of, I mean, all students were practically doing MDMA, and it was just open. It was just easy and the thing to do, legal. And so I guess entering into the scene at that time, there wasn't any fear until, you know, that shut down. And I mean, LSD wasn't legal then, but because we were kind of focused on MDMA, it just, and the school too. I mean, the school made a huge difference, because it was a school of all the professors and staff and students were all very open-minded people, you know, explorers of consciousness, really. Mm-hmm. So being in that environment is just, you know, it's amazing. I mean, it's really really different. So no, I didn't have any fear, and I'm not a very fearful person either. I guess I was just curious and open, and I highly respected him, because Ralph was never reckless. You know, he's very serious and very careful, and but you know, he had to be very underground, very careful when he was
once things were deemed illegal, then the whole industry went underground and went very careful. All right. So you got to take another break. When we come back, let's talk about maybe some of the different contributions of the book. So the book isn't fully written by you. There's a whole bunch of people who contributed to this book. So maybe let's touch upon some of those contributions. Okay. Wonderful, Dr. Coleman. Thank you. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. Kathy Coleman, author of the book, Ralph Metzner.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
Explorer of Consciousness, the life and legacy of a psychedelic pioneer, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So, Dr. Coleman, I mean, you kind of, this book, Ralph Metzner, Explorer of Consciousness, it's really a huge, I guess, anthology from many different people writing about Ralph, that you're really sort of, you have your own contribution, but you also collected a tremendous number of essays from such famous people as Stanislav Grof, Dennis McKenna, Rick Doblin, of course, the head of MAPS. And I also see his kids, your children also contributed something. I'm wondering just maybe what are one or two of like the top contributions that people gave that means something special to you?
There are many. It might be good to mention that how I got those contributions, because mm-hmm. The Green Earth Foundation has a newsletter, and I just put it out in the newsletter to see if anybody was interested in contributing. And about 80 people came forth and said they wanted to contribute. Probably got maybe 70 essays from those 80 or so. And then I thought about who else should be in it. So people like Rick and Stan and some of those that you mentioned, I contacted them myself to see if they wanted to write, because I knew they were close to Ralph. And so anyway, well, even starting with Stan's contribution, it's very, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, coming into Ralph's life only when he was 50, I didn't, you know, I continue to uncover like the past and put the pieces together. But there's a story in there about how a synchronistic story about how Stan met Ralph, you know, and he was out of money and needed a ride to someplace. And the person he rode, who gave him a ride, had to stop at Millbrook, New York, which was the commune where Leary, Alpert, and Ram Dass were living, along with other people. And so they stopped there. And then that's when he met Leary and Ralph, and they gave him a copy of the book, The Psychedelic Experience. So anyway, that's just, touching. I mean, they're all touching, really. And what's so interesting is, you know, so many, I mean, Ralph had these many different parts of himself. And so all these different writers in the book have written about very different things. You know, there's people who wrote about the connecting with him around the green psychology part of his life, or maybe the mythological party or part of his life. There's a contribution in there from a man who just knew him from speaking at a conference in that Ralph programmed in Killarney, Ireland. And this man's name is Alistair McIntosh. And he researched kind of Ralph's roots, his Scottish roots, and what he knew about his Scottish roots, and then how, you know, he experienced him today. And that's a very clever, interesting piece. Uwe Durkin, a German man who Ralph knew and worked with for quite a while, and was also on the Green Earth Foundation board for a while, he wrote a really wonderful piece about just all these different aspects of Ralph, you know, as Ralph's healer, you know, shaman, scholar, mentor, and even friend, you know. So he kind of covered this whole vast aspect of Ralph that he experienced, and that's really beautiful. I love the contribution from Michael Flanagan, who was Ralph's assistant at CIS for many years, and he's quite a scholar himself. And the title of his contribution is Ralph's Animation of the Academy, which really is what Ralph did at CIS. He brought so many new ideas and new programs and people working on the cutting edge of different things to CIS, and really changed it. So that contribution is special. But really, there's not one, and there's 27 essays that didn't make it into the book just because of space. They're posted on the Green Earth Foundation website, greenearthfoundation.org, And
Okay.
So all these essays are pretty pithy and, interesting, really.
And I mean, there's so many in here. How many essays are there in
60
here?
60 are in the book, 60 essays.
60, wow. And so how did you organize this? Like, that's a lot of information to organize.
Well, I had it organized similar to this, but then the editors at Inner Traditions slightly tweaked that, and I like their tweaking even better. But I kind of organized it by, academic, scholarly, colleagues, and then, the early years, there's an essay by his brother, his younger brother, writing about, it's called The Unusual Second Son, who was Ralph. And then artist, because Ralph was big on kind of fostering people's artistic endeavors. And he also, Ralph was pretty artistic himself. I mean, he took up piano, or he learned it as a child, but then he retook it up in when he was 60 years old, and wrote some songs and did a couple of albums. And so he was pretty creative himself. So there was a creative section. And but one thing I didn't have in the original list, I had these people in other categories, was there's actually a section on death and dying here. It's called Death, Conscious Dying, and the Afterlife, because Ralph was very big on using consciousness and psychedelics to prepare for death and to, become comfortable with death. And and of course, that's the psychedelic experience is based on that, based on the, a interpretation of this Tibetan Book of the Dead. And so anyway, there's about five essays in that section. I thought that was really great that happened.
And just out of curiosity, did it help him towards the end of his life?
Oh, yes. He really died a very conscious, peaceful death. He had a disease. He knew he was going to die. He didn't. He died sooner than the medical people had told him he probably would. But he was very. He sort of taken care of all of his business and had a very good attitude about it. He didn't want to die, but he was very peaceful about accepting it. And
what do you hope people get from this book? I mean, besides kind of getting to know Ralph better, but what do you hope someone reading through all these essays, what do you hope that they'll take from this?
That's a really good question. But I think it would be inspiration to, inspiration to live your, to live your best life, And I think what's inspiring about it is there's so many different parts of it. And there's simple things. Like one story I love in there was Ralph just, there's a woman, an Chelis Glendinning, who's an author who lives in Bolivia. She put out a newsletter. He responded to it. They ended up having a pen pal relationship, and he would send her teas from America. She would send him coca candies from Bolivia. And I mean, I never even knew this until I read that story. But it's a sweet story about just, in our everyday life, these possibilities enter our worlds, and we can take advantage of them and make something of them and make connections. And and also, just like I was thinking a lot about your introduction, your blog, and the message in that, and thinking how powerful the mind is. I mean, our minds are so powerful. They're powerful, and they can create a lot of negativity in our lives, but they can create a lot of positive energy and a lot of forward motion. And so that's what I think, you know, would be something, would be a big takeaway, was, is just to be comfortable in expressing who you are and your own potential and how you, you know, hold the world and interact with the world. And
Wonderful. So you mentioned how, like, you didn't know something about him, and that you learned from that particular essay. Was there anything in collecting these stories and reading them that surprised you, that you didn't know about him, that just kind of made you go, oh, really?
Like, not really, nothing big. Okay. There's small things like that, or like...
Okay.
Like Delee Lance has an essay in here. Delee was a fellow graduate student in his class at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And she's a psychotherapist, and she's been a professor at CIS. And so so she wrote this essay, and in there she said she'd overheard this conversation that the faculty were making mm-hmm. in their program, and they were saying, oh, Ralph Messner is the, you know, smartest graduate student in the class. And the other professor said, no, Ralph is the smartest graduate student that's ever come through this program.
Wow.
So it's like that kind of thing, kind of, I go, wow, that kind of blew my mind. But at the same time, I knew he was really smart, and, and he's just, he's got a, you know, such a drive for knowledge. So, and I would say the one thing, Ralph really included me so much in his life. All these people, almost all the people in the book I know personally, because he, you know, just people he worked with, people he met along the way, his friends, he just would draw me into the circle. So it's, I mean, with him dying, I realized what an incredible gift that was, that I still have relationships with all these people, which of course I tended and fostered as well, but you know, it was really a gift. So no, nothing really, but then, you know, there's small things like that.
Gotcha. Wonderful. Okay, we've got one last break to take. When we come back, let's just talk about some of the other things, like the Green Earth Foundation. You know, what's that all about? And maybe we'll touch upon some of the astrological stuff a little bit. Okay. Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking this hour with Dr. Kathy Coleman, author of the book, Ralph Metzner, Explorer of Consciousness. And we'll be right back to finish up our interview. Stay with us.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Oh. So, Dr. Coleman, there are a few, you know, other things besides Ralph's lifelong interest in psychedelics that he was involved with and that you involved with him. One of them being the Green Earth Foundation. So you mentioned it before. What exactly is that foundation all about?
Well, basically, it was a publishing arm for Ralph's work. Now, in the early days, we founded it in 1989, shortly after we got married. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's very, I mean, his name for it, Green Earth, it's really a lot of who he was about, because he really did care about, you know, the planet. Mm-hmm. He was very early on to, you know, our problems with environment, global warming. And so he had a newsletter for many years, and he would just publish various things of interest about, you know, sort of related to psychology, the planet, consciousness, ecology. And then at some point, the newsletter kind of, you know, evolved into just the, you know, going to the website and not publishing and then of course, just a newsletter that he would send out to all of the people on his list rather than a paper copy. But also it just served as kind of a, you know, he had a board and it served as a vehicle for his publications. And maybe one of the major things that came out of it was his board were constantly trying to get him to actually write about all of his knowledge about psychedelics all these years. Uh-huh. And so one of the last books he wrote was a book called Allies for Awakening. Mm-hmm. And Allies for Awakening is about sort of everything he knew about psychedelics, from, you know, how to do, you know, ceremonies and the work and dosages and all the pharmacology and et cetera. So basically everybody who reads that book loves that book. It is a great contribution to the field. And and he would have never written that book if it hadn't been for his board
really kind of pushing him towards it. Yeah.
To do it. I mean, I was there to witness the day he goes, okay, you know.
Okay. Wonderful. I'll have to check that one out. And I'm just curious about Earthrise Retreat, which was a part of the Institute for Noetic Sciences. It was started by Edgar Mitchell, right?
Right. I mean, it was. They actually sold the property in the institute called, refer to IONS.
IONS, yeah.
They sold the property about 4 years ago, maybe. So there's no longer a retreat center there. The Institute of Noetic Sciences does still exist and they still do research, but just in a small office, and they have a cube and research staff. And
Gotcha. And I mean, it's a big part of your life and was part of his life, this whole endeavor into astrology. What sort of brought this fascination or this desire front and center? And I have a very deep appreciation for it. We used to have a gentleman on our network, Monty Taylor, who was a Jungian astrologer, and he used to talk about astrology in such depth because he'd bring in the archetypes and the myths and the ancient Greek myths it was based on, and it just made it so alive for me. What was it for Ralph and for yourself that brought astrology so alive for you?
Well, I don't know how Ralph got into it, but I know that he did write about astrology in his book, Maps of Consciousness, which was published in like 1974. I know he was working on it in the early 70s. So it's real, and it's been republished. We recently republished that book. So he's got two great chapters, great overviews of astrology. And so he was really pretty early on. Somehow he bumped into it. And I think just because Ralph was so open to everything beyond ordinary reality that astrology has just resonated with him. Then, and my interests came from my younger brother actually kind of introduced me to sun sign astrology. And then when I was in high school, and then in my early 20s, when I was around 24, I moved to Houston, Texas, and I'd left my first husband, and I was new in town, new to astrology. And there was a course, I opened up the Houston newspaper, and there was a course being taught by an astrologer for the singles, Houston Singles Club. So I went to it, and that person, the person who taught that, Jeannie Long, became a famous financial astrologer over time. But I just, that was my introduction, and I really gravitated toward it. And I just studied it then for all these years since I was about 24. And it, you know, as first it was just a hobby, and then it just became a profession now. And it's my main, it's kind of my main thing. I mean, I'm very advanced. I have all the testing and all this. I'm actually head of the Professional Astrologers Alliance testing and certification program. And, I've also studied Vedic astrology, so I know that pretty thoroughly, and, some Hellenistic astrology. So I too am very interested in different systems of thought. And so that's really an intersection that Ralph and I shared. And he taught astrology in the summers at CIS and I took, you know, his course, like, I think it was the second summer that I was there. So he knew I had this deep interest and knowledge of astrology. So we really actually connected with that. Now he was seeing clients probably still even at the time that we got together, but once we got together, he just kind of left. He said, okay, you be the astrologer, I'll be the psychologist. And so
gotcha.
So didn't take it as far as I did on a daily basis, kind of, but
so we just got a minute or two left. I'd be curious of what do you think Ralph would say about sort of the current state of the psychedelic industry, you know, with MAPS. They got turned down on their phase 3 clinical trial for MDMA, and their clinical trials coming up for psilocybin and LSD. And there's, you know, some controversy within the industry about the medicalization versus holding these substances in a more traditional or shamanic tradition. What do you think Ralph's view of all this would be?
Well, Ralph could hold a lot of complexity and chaos. And in a way, that was part of his magic and his worldview. And his point of view was that there's a place for it all at the table. So he wasn't one of these polarizing people who was just like, no, that they, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is not good for psychedelics. He thought, you know, it's all good. It's all trying to further the work in a way. Yeah, there are, you know, sometimes there's fringy things that don't work. I mean, Ralph had a lot of integrity that he always brought to his work, but still he held a place in his mind for everything working together. I think around the MAPS being turned down, he would just think, okay, yeah, it's hard to, it's really a hard thing to get through, you know, government, but I think he would think it would happen again. I certainly do think it'll open up at some point. I just think that wasn't the moment. Sometimes there's not the right players in place. But, you know, he'd be a little bit concerned about, that there's so much, I mean, there's like, it's grown so fast and so much, he would be concerned about recklessness or lack of integrity and with people doing things that they're not really, you know.
Right. There are a lot of people out there who are leading ceremonies who are really not qualified and things like that.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Holman, it's been a pleasure having you on my show. I could talk to you for hours, unfortunately. Our time is up. Thank you so much for coming on the show again. Dr. Kathy Coleman, author of the book, Ralph Metzner, Explorer of Consciousness, highly, highly recommended, available wherever books are sold. So thank you, Dr. Coleman.
Thank you so much, Sam.
You're welcome. And thank you, my loyal listeners, of course, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. So thank you all for staying with us this time. And don't forget, we have lots of shows on talkradio.nyc. Our next live show, Frank is on hiatus. So Tommy's show tomorrow morning, Philanthropy in Focus, all about nonprofits. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care. We will talk to you all next week.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be Frank About Health with all of you.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number? Oh.
Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.